Recently, I had an event in New York City. I had hundreds of people come, and I brought actual real couples up on stage and did a mini podcast right there in front of everyone. It was awesome, and I'm very pleased to announce that I'm doing two more events. I want to let you know about it before anyone else knows. June 1st, I'm going to be in Philadelphia. June 4th in Boston. If you want tickets, you can get them at iwt.com/Philly and iwt.com/Boston. Between now and May 3rd, you can use the pre-sale code RICHLIFE to get tickets. Again, June 1st, I'll see you in Philly, and June 4th in Boston, iwt.com/Philly and iwt.com/Boston. What the hell is going on this podcast that like 80% of the people who come on here go through massive screening, fill out applications, they never actually read my book? Is anyone else puzzled by this? Look, a lot of the questions that you ask me about money are answered directly in I Will Teach You to Be Rich. How do you pay off your student loans? How do you automate your finances? Where do you start investing? And how do you handle big purchases? I wrote this book as a 6-week program so you can follow along on your own or with a partner. If you want to improve your finances, I recommend you get the I Will Teach You to Be Rich book. It has over 18,000 reviews on Amazon. Get it at iwt.com/book. I'm speechless.
Yeah.
You paid off $130,000 of credit card debt 6 months ago, and now you have $50,000 of credit card debt just 6 months later?
Yeah.
Whoa.
We need something that works because nothing's working. Like, working through how not to repeat past mistakes, because we throw out a plan, but we always seem to get back to where we were, because we both have the goal. Like, we're committed to wanting to build this house and wanting to travel in our rich life, but we don't have a common plan to get there. This is a generational issue, I think, on both sides. And now, as a mom and as a wife, I'm breaking that.
Meet Kevin and Sarah. He's 42, she's 38. They have accumulated $200,000 of debt. Then they sold their house to pay it off, and now they're finding that those old habits are coming right back. I went back to their application when they initially wrote into me, and I found a line that I'd like to share with you. Sarah wrote, "Kevin recently told me that if I kept adding debt to my credit card, he would ask for a divorce. My parents got divorced over money, so I'm desperate to figure this out." We're going to talk to Kevin and Sarah today. But one of the biggest lessons of this podcast is that our money decisions are rarely only our own. A lot of us like to imagine that we're rational, logical people. We're pushing our shopping cart down the aisle and we're making a careful cost-benefit analysis before we buy those Ritz crackers. In reality, our parents bought those crackers, and they subconsciously taught us that love means buying this exact brand. We learn how to talk about money from the people around us. We learn how to invest it, or if investing is even for people like us. And of course, we learn how to spend from the people around us. And it is very, very hard to shake those generational lessons away. I would encourage you to listen to this episode, and I would invite you to watch it on YouTube. The body language and the facial expressions you'll see add a whole layer of understanding. You can find this episode on YouTube by searching for Ramit Sethi, and be sure to follow my channel there. Now let's begin. I'm Ramit Sethi, and this is I Will Teach You to Be Rich.
We did Dave Ramsey's thing. We tried that, spreadsheets, our own made up, throwing spaghetti against the wall. I don't know. What am I missing? I mean, we've probably tried it.
And so coming on this show to talk to me, for you, what does it represent?
I'm an emotional person, so there might be tears. Hope is what I hear in all of your podcasts. And so.
Hope to do what?
Figure it out. We have very different backgrounds when it comes to money. And we want I want commonality and tools and a way to speak to each other where we can actually hear each other when it comes to money. We tried to talk about money. And I was like researching your site and you're listening to your podcast. I'm an all-in kind of person. And we started having a conversation about money, just trying to communicate, because you'll find that that's where we struggle deeply. And we just lost it on each other.
So talk me through that conversation. Do you remember where you both were?
Gosh, there've been so many. I think we were actually probably I was sitting here and he was in the living room, and it was something, I don't remember exactly what it was, because like I said, there have been so many, but it was basically, screw this. Like, I'm done. Something's got to change. Probably what it was him getting mad at me about what was spent on credit cards.
What you spent on credit cards, or what was spent?
What I spent, because it's my card.
I'd like to hear from you, Kevin. I'd like to hear about that same conversation that the two of you had, where you both became really frustrated. What do you remember about that conversation?
I think I know what she's referring to. And this comes with accumulations of things that it's a built up of, throughout our marriage. I get short fused. And so in that particular moment, there were the expectation in my head, hey, we should be at this ceiling. And when we spoke, the ceiling was higher. And therefore I was like, oh, that means that there's more debt that we have to.
Sorry, what does ceiling mean? What are you referring to?
Just in the sense of, I thought that the debt was at that level, and it turns out to be at the higher level. Right now, we're probably at $50,000 in debt, of credit card debt.
50?
50.
Okay.
I want the clean slate every month. So like you've talked about in your book, like utilizing credit cards as an account versus, because you can use them for certain things that are very beneficial. And so I think you do it that way. But if you don't have a plan in place of what you're putting on the cards, then it can get out of control. And so
is it out of control for you now?
Yeah, I mean, the amount, yes, it is.
Okay. Anything else that is or is not out of control?
Lots of things, I feel like, right now. But
tell me.
Yes. I mean, just, we sold our house. We sold our house, in May, and moved into a rental house with the goal of building. That's been a lifelong dream of mine, of building our own house. We had to switch. Gosh, why is this? Sorry, we've had a really tough year. And so we had to switch our girls' school, because they went through a lot of stuff. They're in private school, and they went through a lot of stuff at their old private school. So we had to switch schools for them. So I think that out of control is just level of stress, and we're very outside of our comfort zones right now. And my business is maintaining. But I lost a pretty big account in October, and that dropped my income in half, almost in half. And then my income for my business has kind of steadily gone down. Not much, but a little bit. So it's just, there's just been a lot of stress. I really struggle when I can't control things. So
how do you react when you have more and more stress like this? What do you do?
It depends on the level, but I tend to get depressed and I start withdrawing, or I blow up. And it's usually blowing up at Kevin.
And this is, bluntly put, this has caused an issue in our marriage, is where professionally I has been so heads down that there are moments, more than moments, that in our marital lives where I didn't see her going through these times until she blew up, or until it was verbally told to me. And in the meantime, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if this is happening, then that means I need to double down and buckle in into my work so that we can come out on the better end together. But she's suffering because of that, because she's not getting the support emotionally. So this is full transparency here.
I really appreciate it. It really helps me understand the dynamic here. A few things to note. There's a lot of emotion in their description of money, a lot of history, and I'm going to spend time trying to unravel it. Along the way, I suspect that Kevin and Sarah will get a better understanding of what's really going on, because when something like money is covered in emotion, it's easy to lose sight of the real issues. It's like a bad relationship. Everything feels existential. You'll also notice that there are some clues. Something about their girls, something about Sarah's dream of building a house, something about Kevin having the best year of his career last year. We're going to get into all that, and we'll get into all the numbers. But I think it's important for you to know that Kevin and Sarah are high earners. Keep that in mind as we continue on this conversation.
I think that money is a foundational struggle for us, because we can't sit down and have a non-emotional conversation. Or it's very rarely that we can do that.
Is that the dream, to have a non-emotional conversation about money?
Yeah.
Okay. And if you were to have a non-emotional conversation about money, what would that look like?
Just sitting down together over wine or dinner or out to eat, or just in the living room and talking about the spending and the things that we've done without criticism or feeling put down.
Who feels put down?
I do.
Okay. So you'd have conversations without you feeling put down. What else?
Feeling as an equal in the conversation. And having a common goal. And we do, maybe it's more like a common plan. Maybe that's a better way of putting it, because we both have the goal. Like we're committed to wanting to build this house and wanting to travel in our rich life, but we don't have a common plan to get there.
What has stopped you from making a common plan towards an already common goal?
We don't speak the same language.
Ah, what language do you speak?
Well, we don't. He actually does completely speak a different language, but he speaks numbers, and like, it's just very, this is how it is. I mean, a perfect example is, he was like, can't you just transfer the money over to the credit card? And I don't know why that is very hard for me to do. And he's like, it's just a button, click a button. And I'm like, it's not that easy. There's a lot of emotion behind it.
So he speaks the language of numbers. And what language do you speak?
Emotion. My childhood was very much all emotions when it came to finances. My parents divorced over finances. Like, there's a lot of baggage.
I want to talk about how you were raised. I find it very interesting that you speak the language of emotions.
Yeah.
You were raised with emotions, but you told me that your number one goal is to have a non-emotional conversation about money.
Because I don't want to cry through every conversation or avoid or yell at each other. I want maybe it's non-emotional, it's positive emotion.
Ah, that's different, right?
Excited, yeah.
Because can I just say, I don't think there's anything wrong with having emotions about money. Everybody does. Even Kevin, who's Mr. Numbers. Yeah. I bet you he has emotions. Give me 5 minutes, I'll find him. Everybody has them. And I think sometimes we're raised with this idea that deep down emotions are weakness, but they're not. They're just human. So can we reshape your goal? You said first that you want to have a non-emotional conversation about money. I think that would be really boring. What would you like to do instead?
I want to have a conversation that is positive and is forward thinking and is exciting to sit down and talk, look what our money's doing and where we're going and look what we're going to be able to do. It's just so exciting.
All right. I can get behind that. Kevin, are you down for that?
I'm writing it down.
Okay. Love it. Okay, good. Okay. And when you two got married, how long ago was that?
We just celebrated 14 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. That's awesome. 14 years. Amazing. Okay. Yeah. 14 years, 3 kids. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. All right. A lot of you listening right now beat yourselves up for things that are deeply held parts of your personality. Sarah basically started crying in the first 2 minutes of our conversation. But 4 minutes later, she tells me she wants to have a non-emotional conversation about money. That's not going to happen. That would be like me going to a French restaurant and saying, ooh, I'd really love to spend $89 on some poulet that's seasoned with 3 particles of salt. It's not going to happen. I want some fucking spice on my chicken. I'm not going to a French restaurant and Sarah is not going to have a non-emotional conversation. A better approach is what she finally said. She wants to have a conversation with positive emotions. Maybe she will later say that she wants to become comfortable talking about numbers. I can help with that. But I'm glad we caught this now, because if you truly detest something about yourself, if you believe you need to fully extinguish it, it's going to be very hard to actually change. If you ever follow me on Instagram, sometimes you'll see me post about my behind-the-scenes travel experiences, coffee tours, salsa-making classes in Mexico, all kinds of culinary stuff in India. And I'll get a lot of people saying, where do I find that Kyoto notepad maker that you found? And one place you can find that is Viator. In fact, my wife and I used Viator to book a Segway tour where we took a tour of a new city and we had an amazing experience, something we never would have thought of doing on our own. They offer everything from simple tours to extreme adventures. And with over 300,000 bookable experiences in 190 countries, there's something for everybody. Plus, Viator's travel experiences have millions of real travel reviews, so you have the information you need to book the best travel activities for your trip. When you book a travel experience with Viator, there's always flexibility and support with free cancellation, payment options, and 24/7 service. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. One app, over 300,000 travel experiences you'll remember. Do more with Viator. I have a friend of mine who's always cold. She told me she and her partner have totally different temperatures when they sleep. She goes to bed in a flannel pajama. She's got extra blankets. Her partner's running hot. So now she recently started testing the pod cover from 8 Sleep, one of our sponsors. Before she goes to sleep, she gets on the app, cranks up the heat, and when she gets into bed at night, it's already warm and waiting for her. The pod cover by 8 Sleep fits on your bed like a fitted sheet. And it collects information. It has sensors. The pod then uses that information to understand what you need to get better sleep. You can set it to heat up or cool down before you get into bed. It also adjusts while you sleep. And you can set it to change temperatures to gently wake you up in the morning. Best part, there are 2 zones. So if you run hot and your partner runs cold, you can each set your side of the bed to exactly how you want it. Improve the way you sleep by using my link at 8sleep.com/Ramit for $200 off plus free shipping on their high-tech Pod 3 cover. That's 8sleep.com/Ramit, E-I-G-H-T, sleep.com/Ramit, R-A-M-I-T, for a better, smarter sleep. Sarah, will you tell me about how you were raised with money? What do you remember about growing up with your parents?
What I do remember is there was a lot of turmoil between my parents and especially finances. My parents were raised very differently. When it came to money and in general, and one of the biggest things, I was thinking about it earlier today, was my sitting at dinner going, had gone out to eat. My dad ordered a steak. And so there's four of us. I'm one of four. And my siblings and I are like, oh, well, we want steaks too. Da-da. And my mom would either order nothing or soup. And we would find out as I got older, the reason we did that was we couldn't afford it. And instead of arguing with my dad there in the restaurant, she would just let it happen. And there were lots of times my dad bought a car without consulting her. And there were six of us and it was a five-seater. And it was like, and then he'd go and buy TVs and just different things. And it was always, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. And
who said that?
My mom.
Okay.
And my dad worked hard, but we grew up on the poor side. He grew up very poor. And my mom grew up wealthy. And so it was very two different sides of the track.
Can you think of any examples where that difference really manifested itself?
I know of some that my mom told me about. They would not be able to pay the light bill. Mm-hmm. And my dad would say, just go ask your parents for it.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. And your mom told you that story, not your dad?
My mom told me that story, yes.
And did they separate your parents?
Mm-hmm. When I was 16.
Why then?
Mm-hmm. Money and other things.
I see. Mm-hmm. And who was the one who initiated the separation?
I think my mom.
Okay. Looking back now as an adult, as a mother, looking back on how you were raised as it relates to money, what are the things that you take away?
That my mom was just trying to survive was a big one.
I know my dad had a lot of struggles as a child as well that he was never able to work through. And it really was a problem. This is a generational issue, I think, on both sides. And now as a mom and as a wife, and I'm breaking that. And I don't want my children, and we have three girls. And so I don't want them to grow up in their life and not know what I didn't know. I don't want them to be in these same positions to risk their marriages because they can't budget well or whatever. I don't want to end up like that. And I don't want us to end up like that.
Do you think you are destined to end up like that?
If we keep going the way we're going, yes.
That helps me understand a lot. Thank you. Kevin, what about you? How were you raised with money?
My dad worked a lot. My lifespan that I've seen, he managed the money. My mom stayed at home. Once my dad's career really took off, she didn't need to be a teacher anymore, and so she stayed at home. So that's what I remember for most of my life.
What did you learn about money when, now that you look back as an adult? What are your takeaways?
Well, this is where it gets a little... throughout my life, I've never been educated about money. I saw it. I was around it, but wasn't educated about it. So I didn't grow up in this country. I grew up abroad. And with that, there's some culture differences, right? But I didn't have an education about money. I just knew my dad took care of it.
Sarah, you reached out because of a series of conversations. Describe it for me. What is the situation? It sounds like you have together $50,000 worth of debt. What would you say in a sentence or two seems to be the problem that keeps coming up for both of you?
Lack of communication. Mm-hmm. and connection. I think that we have to find even more commonality in what we want for our money. We've got to come together on that roadmap. And
let me ask you a question about yourself. You mm-hmm. specifically, what behaviors do you think you need to change in order to break that generational curse?
I think, well, one of the big ones is impulse. I impulse purchase. Mm-hmm. And usually out of emotion. Or feeling what like else? I deserve it. I think some of the things that I tell myself about money, and I think probably just, yeah, I would say a lot of it's the impulses, the way I speak about it, the way I talk about it, and the way I think about it.
Mm-hmm. Be sure to watch her facial expressions on that last exchange. They are very revealing. This $50,000 of credit card debt, whose credit card is that on?
Mostly mine.
All right. So you have a joint checking, yes. Joint investment. Is that joint?
It is.
Okay.
Cool. And then we each have, he has a 401k and I have a Roth.
Great. All right. You have separate credit cards.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious about like the bills, the day-to-day bills getting paid. For example, your rent,
yep.
Eating out. Like, how does that decision get made about who pays for what?
The rent, the like, to live our life under our roof, rent, utilities, all that kind of stuff. I set it up. I put it on my card. Except for the rent. It has to come out of the checking account. So it's on the joint checking account.
Okay.
But anything that was going on could go on a card. I just put it on the credit card.
Your credit card?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And all then right. When it's eating out, it is, I mean, a lot of us for eating out is convenience because we're pretty busy. And so it's, if we're all together, typically it's on his card. If it's me with the kids, it's mine. If I'm ordering, it's mine. Okay. If it's through an app, it's probably mine.
So it's just like whoever's basically doing the thing is mm-hmm. pulling out their credit card. Okay.
Yeah.
Does this cause any problems for you?
Quite a bit.
Oh, it's, I was like, this is yeah. kind of a weird setup, but you both seem very calm about it. I'm like, is there any issue here? And then I go, is this a problem? And both of you are nodding furiously.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the problem? Break it down. What happened the last time y'all argued about this?
So if I think one way to add to the context is when we sold our house, we were able to be debt free. We sold the house. We're like X debt, credit card, no more. That's it. Blah blah blah. And then we reintroduced it, and there it goes again. Bad behaviors, mm-hmm. where there's no plan set where we actually could get back to zero. Mm-hmm. And for a minute we did it, but then there are some things that occur. Pull the trigger here, pull the trigger there, and next thing you know, it's the snowball. And here you are reaccumulating debt.
Okay. Let me ask a few questions about the pattern that you seem to be in. How much did you sell your house for?
$1,050,000.
Okay. And how much did you take home after the sale?
It was like $369 or $396.
Yeah, so somewhere around there.
All right.
I have 375 in my head. But
let's say 375. And did that include all fees that you had to pay, transaction mm-hmm. fees, all that?
Yeah.
What about taxes? So,
yeah, that's what we walked away with.
Okay. Walked away with including paying taxes, et cetera, on anything that you owed.
Yeah, minus $500 that we had to pay for HOA. But yes.
Okay, great. So 375. And how much credit card debt did you have at that time?
$130,000
credit card debt.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was, yep.
130. And was there any other type of debt at that time?
Student loans, cars.
Cars multiple?
Yes.
Okay. And student loans, whose student loans?
Mine.
Okay. All right. So you had, how much was it? 130?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you were able to pay all that off and you still had a couple $100,000.
Yes.
Awesome. All right. Great. So did you, was it kind of like a big thing in your household? Like, all right, we're paying off this debt.
Huge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What'd that feel like?
Amazing.
Yeah, it did.
That's cool. Was it the first time that you were debt-free in your marriage?
Credit card debt, mostly. Yes. Yes. I think it was completely. I don't know if we've ever been completely. We haven't been completely debt-free.
Did you take the money from the house and pay off all the student loans as well?
No. Because we were, the goal was to take the additional. We sat down and we decided we were going to pay off the credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
And then the additional amount that we had left over, we were going to invest some of it, save some of it to have cash available for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then utilize that for a down payment on land.
Okay.
So we didn't pay everything off. No.
Okay. That student loan that you had, which mm-hmm. you did not pay off, how much was it at the time?
Right around 30,000.
Okay. What was the interest rate? Do you remember?
It's nothing, right? I mean,
it's low.
It's zero right now. I mean,
okay. But back then?
This was 6 months ago.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me get this straight. What the hell? I didn't know about these timelines.
Yeah.
Hold on. Oh, I'm speechless. You paid off $130,000 of credit card debt
mm-hmm.
6 months ago, and now you have $50,000 of credit card debt just 6 months later?
Yeah.
Whoa. So what happened?
Life.
Wait, okay, this is like, if this was 5 years, I would be like, all right, yeah, life happens. But 6 months, we can figure this out in like 25 seconds. Let's just do it right now. Okay, life happens. All right, life, not that much life happens in 6 months. So let's break it down. What vacations did you take in the last 6 months?
Well, we paid for a cruise that we have coming up.
How much is that? Ballpark.
7,000, I think.
What do you think? What number do you think I would pick to write down here? How much is your cruise going to cost? You said 7,000. What do I think the real number is?
8?
No.
8,500?
Higher. Kevin?
11,150. Love up on it.
Okay. So let's say 11,000. What else you spend money on the last 6 months?
Business stuff. This is that credit card debt is including the business cards.
Okay. How much did you spend on the business?
I think it's 15.
Okay. 15 on business. You spent that on a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else? Eating out, you mentioned?
Eating out. That's a big one.
How much?
Us. 3 to 4,000 a month.
Let's say 4,000 a month. What else did you spend money on the last 6 months?
Yeah. I had surgery in July.
Okay.
And so a big cost was post care.
Okay. How much was that?
I was spending, I think, almost $1,000 a month.
For 6 months?
For five.
Wow. Months. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And are you doing all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good to hear. Okay. Anything else?
Christmas.
How much?
I don't know.
Hmm. Like, 100, 10,000. What are we talking about?
4,000.
All right. Anything else? Clothes you mentioned, Sarah?
Clothes. This is actually the first time we've had to buy like a large amount of clothes because our mm-hmm. girls were in uniforms before and the school had like a hand-me-down thing.
Mm-hmm.
So in August, we spent, I don't know, maybe 2,000 on clothes for all three of the girls.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what other, I've had some trips with my business. What? The one in September was about 2000. Mm-hmm. Cabo was my flight, which I spent quite a bit on my flight.
How much?
$3,500.
Okay. What else?
And what else? August, September, October. Just little
coaching.
Oh yeah, business coaching.
How much was that?
It was $1,700 a month for 6 months, and then now it's $900 a month for 6 months.
Let's just say $1,000 a month, just for easy math. Mm-hmm. So that would be $6,000. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah.
All right. All right. So if we add up all those numbers, what do you think we get?
A lot.
Any idea? Just take a guess.
30.
Okay.
35.
30. Well, which one is it?
30.
Okay.
35, since we're going with the larger numbers.
Let me finish calculating these. $72,500 in the last 6 months. What do you think about that number?
Wow. That's unexpected.
All right. I need to lay down the fucking law here for a few different items. Can you see that affirmations board behind Sarah? They just spent $72,000 in 6 months, putting them back into credit card debt. But she has these Etsy affirmations behind her, these posters. Here's what they say. This year will be different. I have genius inside of me. I have something the world needs. It's like affirmations are nice, but sometimes you need to look at the fucking numbers. Notice the details. Remember how I always say the best predictor of your future behavior is your current behavior. And people get mad at me. Oh, Ramit, that's not true. I can change. Everybody can change. Well, maybe, but it's hard. You'll also notice that Sarah is using the innocent dough technique to evade actually acknowledging what they're spending on. You don't know what the innocent dough technique is? Let me explain. Imagine a wide-eyed Bambi. Me? Little old me? I have no idea what's going on with our money. I don't know. That's the innocent dough technique. And I can tell you, because if it was 5 years of spending, okay, we could figure it out. It would take a while. They ran up $50,000 of credit card debt in 6 months. It took us 3 minutes to figure this out. Some of you have been procrastinating on some money question for 13 years that would take us 15 seconds to find the answer to. You could join my money coaching program. Let's solve it right now. You'll also notice another clue. She has a verbal tick of giving ranges. $3,000 to $4,000. That means $4,000. More likely $7,000. You know why? Because she doesn't want to count phantom costs in. A cruise isn't just what you paid for the room. It's the drinks, the extra food, the excursions, the flight, the hotels, all of it. Add 50% to the sticker price to be conservative. That's exactly what I add whenever I stay at a hotel or whenever I look at buying a house. So there are a lot of clues in that short exercise that really reveal a lifetime of attitudes and behaviors that Sarah has bought into. A few years ago, I was at a tea tasting in New York with one of my buddies. I thought it was going to be a normal tea tasting. Suddenly, six people from Japan come in. They pour basically three thimblefuls of tea, and we taste it. I've never tasted anything like that. And they tell us, if we were to buy that, just the three thimblefuls, it would be $75. Now, drop for drop, that's the most expensive thing I've ever had to drink. Not all of us have the time or the money to buy that specific tea from that specific mountainside in Japan. But what if you could capture that feeling of the care and the love, even the way that they served it to us? What if you could bring that to your home every morning? Well, I want to introduce you to one of our newest sponsors, Peak Tea. What makes Peak Tea special is that the tea is cold extracted using only wild harvested leaves from 250-year-old tea leaves. That makes the tea rich in minerals and other beneficial compounds. Now, the greatest part is that Peak Tea is zero prep. There's no tea bag that you have to steep for the perfect amount of time. Peak dissolves in cold or hot water in seconds. It's already pre-measured, it's perfectly brewed, and it's perfect to take if you travel. My team's been trying Peak Tea, and they especially love the Pu'er green teas. For a limited time, get up to 15% off and a free quiver with 12 tea samples with my link, peaklife.com/Ramit. That's PIQUELIFE.com/Ramit, R-A-M-I-T. I get tons of email every single day, and I want to give you a behind-the-scenes look at how I manage emails from my team, from my family, and from you. I use a piece of software called Superhuman, and this is an email software that I actually pay for out of my own pocket. It works with your existing email service like Gmail or Outlook, and let me share how it saves me over 10 hours a week. So here are a few things I love about it. First off, it splits my inbox into different streams, so my important emails come into one place. It's not cluttered with a bunch of subscriptions everywhere. Next, I use keyboard shortcuts. Unlike you barbarians who literally click and peck through every single email, U to mark it unread, S to star it, J or K to cycle through messages. I use keystrokes to schedule messages, like when I want to ask one of my coworkers a question, but I don't want to send them an email on a Saturday. Now, I can work through dozens of emails in minutes using this. And Superhuman just introduced an AI feature, which allows you to take a huge email with all these people chiming in and automatically summarize what's going on in a few bullet points. It'll even draft emails for you. So if you want to buy back your time, Superhuman is a no-brainer to me. It's something I spend my own money on, and I love it. Right now, all IWT listeners will get a free month of Superhuman. You can get started at superhuman.com/Ramit. That's superhuman.com/Ramit, R-A-M-I-T. You mentioned that there are two issues that you have with money. One is impulsive spending, and two is the stories you tell yourself.
Yeah.
What are the stories you tell yourself about this spending?
That it's all my fault.
Yeah? What is that story?
Well, it's just, oh, if I hadn't done this, we would do. It is, I put a lot of, I guess, guilt and stuff on myself for seeing the credit card bill and saying, well, like, oh, we shouldn't have done X, or we shouldn't go on trips, or we shouldn't do these things. And then I think about the way I grew up, and I was like, well, screw that, because I want my kids to have a different life. We didn't do trips. We didn't do fun things. I don't want my kids to feel like that we can't go buy clothes because we don't have any money. And so I just ignore it. And because I just want something different.
Something different about what?
Than what I had growing up.
How long ago was it that you felt that way when you talk about growing up? What year was this?
I mean, really between like, gosh, from what I can remember, like, it was pretty much my whole life.
And that feeling is what? That we don't have enough. I can't have X. What are the feelings that you're trying to escape from?
I think they are embarrassment. Confusion. Frustration. And sadness. There's a lot of sadness about money.
And have you also spoken to a therapist?
Some I actually have, am starting therapy back again.
Good. How do you believe that you stack up to other people in terms of your income and your expenses?
I think income wise, we're pretty comparative.
Yeah. What would you call yourselves?
I don't understand the question.
Are you wealthy?
Middle class. Poor? Oh. Middle class.
You're middle class.
In terms of income.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, we're upper middle class. In terms of revenue. Mm-hmm. Just strictly revenue, not the way we manage.
There's another piece to this we haven't talked about is that Kevin has an inheritance coming in next.
Really?
This year.
Mm-hmm. What? How much?
It depends on the exchange rate, but.
Yeah, it depends on the exchange rate.
But not that much.
Three to 400,000.
Yeah, we'll keep it like that.
All right, good. Something like that. So it's mm-hmm. a sizable amount. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. I did not know that. And what's the plan with that money?
Well, that's what we want to talk to you about. We're not asking you to solve our life's problems in a 2 hour span of conversation or however long we'll discuss, but at least is addressing these behaviors that we have so that we don't swallow.
Yeah.
To your point, using the word velocity was beautiful is we don't continue this velocity in which it's going to eat away while we come in.
Yeah, that's it's a great concern because you actually know exactly what will happen right now. Because just 6 months ago, you had the exact same amount and it's essentially gone. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to make that mistake again. All right, let's go through the full conscious spending plan and evaluate it. Who put this conscious spending plan together?
We did it together.
Good. How was that process?
I think because we both were like, we sat down and like, we're looking at the numbers. It was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But it was a civil conversation.
That's good. Let me recap their numbers here for you. Okay. Because something is missing. Their total net worth is $150,000. They have $100,000 in assets. They've got two cars, a Ford Expedition and a Tesla. They've got $137,000 in investments, $93,000 in savings, $179,000 of debt, $30,000 of which is student loans, over $50,000 of which is credit cards, and about $100,000 left on the car loans. All right. Let's talk about the income. I found this one very interesting. All right. So, Sarah, what's your gross annual income?
Annual income?
Mm-hmm.
I think last year I will bring in just under 100,000.
Just under means what? Just tell me a number.
Sorry. I don't think that's great. 70. I'll say 95.
95,000. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And Kevin, what about you?
This past year, 214.
What?
Well, mine was, I'm contracted.
Okay.
I'm a contractor too. So it's like where my income is coming in. So that monthly number is current. 3 months ago, it was at, I don't know, 11,000.
What?
Because so, I lost a large contract.
Okay. So you... But collectively, the two of you are making about $309,000 a year.
This Is that fair to say? Year. Yeah, this last
okay.
year.
Okay. And this year, what will you make?
I don't really know.
Ballpark.
If I hit all my goals?
No, because you're probably not going to. Most people don't.
Probably the same. I'd like for it to be higher, but probably the same.
That would be 95,000.
Mm-hmm.
There must be something else going on here. There's just so much squirming in Sarah's answers. I ask how much she spent on the cruise. She gives me a range. I ask how much Kevin's going to inherit. She gives me a range. By the way, $300,000 to $400,000 is her range. I ask how much she's going to make this year. She gives me a hypothetical. This is a great example of what I mean when I say to live a rich life, you have to be honest with yourself and honest with the people around you. You have to learn how to pick numbers that make planning easy. You can get them wrong. That's okay. You can correct them later. But you have to have a logic for picking some numbers instead of letting them simply hang out in the air and never making a decision at all. Let's have a pleasant discussion about some of the worst things in the world. One of them, finding a doctor. First of all, you realize, oh, I got a problem. But you don't know if you need to call a dermatologist or a podiatrist. So you just start calling everybody. Half of them aren't even there. They don't even pick up the phones. Then when you finally get somebody on the phone, you're like, hey, I have this thing. They go, oh, okay, cool. We can see you in July. Then you ask them, are you in network? Half of them aren't. And you're spending 3 days just making phone calls. What if there was actually a better way to find a doctor? Check out our sponsor, ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doctor you want, you can book them immediately. No more waiting on the phone with a receptionist. And these doctors all have verified reviews from actual real patients. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. The typical wait time to see a doctor is between 24 to 72 hours. You can even book same-day appointments. If I need to book a doctor and I wanted it to be convenient and I wasn't sure where to start, I would try ZocDoc. So go to ZocDoc.com/Ramit and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/Ramit. ZocDoc.com/Ramit. Okay, I love coffee, and I want to tell you about the system I set up so that I can get all kinds of new coffee regularly. I know there's a few brands of coffee that I love. So I set up a document, and in that document, I track the types of coffee I love. Verve, Joe Coffee in New York, and there's a few other brands that I love with the specific roast. But then every single month, I'm hunting, looking for new types of coffee. And so what I'll do is I'll ship myself a couple of new bags of different roasts, different types of coffee from different regions. And then I take a little notation card. I write down what works and what doesn't. Now, if you think I'm a psycho, what am I going to say? This is my rich life. But I'm sharing this because a lot of us love coffee. And a lot of us want to know where to discover new coffee. That's why I am thrilled to introduce you to today's sponsor, Trade Coffee, which is a subscription service that makes it very simple to discover new coffees and to make great coffee at home. Trade partners with top-rated independent roasters so you can get their best quality coffee sent right to your home. It's all handpicked by their coffee experts. And maybe you already know what you like. Like for me, I like Verve Coffee. It's one of my favorite brands. It's on Trade's platform. Or maybe you're not sure and you want to experiment. Either way, Trade makes it easy and convenient to discover new coffees, and they will send them to your home on your preferred schedule. So upgrade your morning routine with better coffee. Right now, Trade is offering our audience a free bag of coffee with any subscription at drinktrade.com/Ramit. That's drinktrade, TRADE.com/Ramit, RAMIT, for a free bag of coffee with any subscription purchase. Again, drinktrade.com/Ramit.
So this year, last year you made 309. This year you're both going to make 309. Fair?
Fair.
Does it make it difficult to plan when you don't know what the numbers are going to be?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Has that been an issue for the two of you?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Do you want me to give you a little solution for that?
Yes, please.
Yes. Okay,
because I hear couples, they agonize over this shit and it drives me insane listening to you. Like right now, just listening to the two of you, my fists are curling up. I go, look, I don't need the exact number. I just need some fucking number that you both feel confident about. And that's not your fault. I'm not blaming you. It's actually psychologically very difficult when you're a contractor or you have different clients. I get it. Okay. What we want to do is we want to pick a number that we are absolutely certain that we can get. Okay. That's the number we're going to work off. That's our baseline. So if you get a bonus at the end of the year, don't include it. Just the number that you know you're going to get. If you have 10 clients and you think three might churn, hell, give yourself a little room to, you have five clients now instead of 10. That's your number. But it's a number that you know for a fact you're 99% confident you can get, 95% confident. And then you work off that number. And anything that comes on top, any annual bonus, et cetera, that's icing on the cake. And we will create a separate thing on what to do with that money.
Okay.
All right. Because otherwise you're just going to drive yourself insane.
Yeah. That's all what right, we're so, doing. So
yeah. And it's, honestly, it's like, we just got to pick a number that we know we can get and let's work with that. The rest of it's icing. So what's the number? Right now you told me 309,000 this year. That seems a bit optimistic.
I think 95 is right for mine.
Okay. Kevin?
I'll be conservative and say 190.
190. Okay. I just want to point something out. This is really funny. So how long have you, has this been driving you crazy? This, like, we're not sure about how much we're going to make.
Probably the last 3 years for me.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Do you know that the difference between the two numbers we picked is literally $24,000? That's nothing in the grand scheme of how much you make. $24,000, that number, that's the difference between 309, 285. That is the number that has been stopping you from just saying, this is our certain number. The lesson here is to stop letting tiny barriers get in the way of your rich life. It's like two parents saying, gosh, we really should get a car seat for our baby. But first, we need to make sure we have the right baby food. And also, what if we get the wrong fabric on the baby seat? And also, we need to talk to grandpa about babysitting. But first, we really need to baby-proof the bathroom. It's like, just go buy the baby seat. Go get the best one. Go get the fifth best one. Get all of them. It does not matter. So many people waste their lives letting these $3 questions get in the way of the actual point of money. And even if you get it wrong, so what? You can fix it next year. You can fix it tomorrow. But at least make a decision. One of the worst things that I hear when I speak to couples is indecisiveness. And it's indecisive from everything like a $5 purchase, you know, or all the way up to what should we do with $5 million that's sitting in our checking account. Building the skill and the habit of being decisive is one of the single best things that you can possibly do for your rich life.
Okay, so can I just say you two make a lot of money? You guys make $300,000 a year. So what's really going on here? It's not an income problem.
Mm-hmm. You ever see those people on TikTok? They're always like wearing these horrible ties. I'm like, first of all, get a new fucking tie. Second of all, who taught you how to tie that tie? And I'm not even the best tie tier, but I'm like, that looks like shit. And these guys are always saying the same thing. There's a hedonic treadmill in the United States. And if you make more money, people always spend more money. I go, shut the fuck up. But the problem is you're actually doing that. Mm-hmm. You're the example they're talking about on TikTok. You made more money and then you started spending more money.
Yeah.
You're violating my own rules. Okay, so look, can we fix this, please? Because it makes me look bad. If somebody goes out in the public, they go, Ramit Sethi's readers, they are on the hedonic treadmill. I go, So tell me this. What do you need to do?
Well, I think pay off the debt.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the double digits credit cards is going to kill us. So there's no... There's no ways around it. And so the first thought is to eliminate the credit card debt.
Okay.
What's the savings?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a possibility. Let's just stay at the high level. So one thing you both know that you want to do is pay off the credit card debt. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Okay, let's not even get into the how, but yes, I totally agree. That's a really important thing to do. Are there any other things that are really important for the two of you to start doing?
Saving for the girls' school next year.
What?
Yep.
How much? What? Where'd that come from? We haven't talked about that at all.
No. So they're in private school. And so we had to switch their school. It's for all three. It's about, without financial aid, it's about $55,000 a year.
What the fuck? Where did it, how are these secret expenses coming up right now? $55,000. What else?
This next year, I think that's it.
That's all.
I mean, the school.
Don't you have to make a donation to these private schools too? No. Okay. She's like shrugging. Eh, all right. Okay. So 55, where's that money coming from, by the way?
So this was our first year and we used some of the house, the money that we, when we sold the house, we used it to pay it for the first year.
Mm-hmm. And where's it going to come from next year and the year after and after that?
Great question. Okay. That's, we're asking ourselves that same question.
This is absolutely blowing my mind right now. They signed up for a $55,000 a year private school without being able to pay for it. I don't even buy lunch without knowing how to pay for it. They committed to 10 plus years of $55,000 a year, and they can only afford 1 year of it. You know, there's this idea floating around the financial world that people who make a lot of money always spend it. Like there's so many Americans making multiple six figures and just living paycheck to paycheck. I don't really love that concept because I know a lot of people making 100K, 250K, 500K who are extremely disciplined about money. But Kevin and Sarah are doing exactly what all those people talk about. They have a high income and they are spending every last cent and more. And worst of all, their attitudes towards money will likely keep them broke for the rest of their lives.
The private school is difficult because this is something that both Sarah and I agreed on very early on. Mm-hmm. The school system that we're in currently isn't bad, but we have recognized that our children do better in smaller settings than larger settings. So before this prior year, we're able to manage it throughout our budget. It was manageable. We only had two children going there. It was doable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This year, it was an increase, significant increase plus an additional child. Mm-hmm. And so hence the big jump.
So how do you think you can handle it?
Yeah.
Make more money
is the only answer.
What do you think of that answer?
I want it to not be the only answer.
Okay.
But it's the only one that I can come up with.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you believe yourself when you say that?
I think yes, but I think it's because we've been so in the weeds, mm-hmm. like you were saying, that we can't be thoughtful and creative about options if it really was that important to us, and making changes, making significant changes if that is what is important to us.
Yeah.
But now we're switching our mindsets about some of this stuff.
Well, that's good. I don't like this line of thinking for several reasons. Okay. First of all, how much do you need to make to pay for the kids' school?
$55,000.
Nope. What about taxes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So 75, 80, 85,000, whatever the number is.
Mm-hmm.
You're already making a lot, so you're at a high marginal tax rate. And we don't need to calculate that right now, but it's more than
$55,000. Mm-hmm.
Like a considerable amount more than $55,000. That's number one, lack of thought into this. Number two, I don't like buying something and then saying, we'll figure out how to pay for it later. That is a terrible decision to make. you know, haven't we all heard people say, like, don't go into debt for a wedding? We've all heard people say that, right?
Yeah.
Did you guys go into debt for a wedding?
Not really.
Okay. No. Isn't this basically the same thing? We're going to commit to $55,000 a year, but we don't actually know how we're going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just for 1 year, is it?
No.
How many more years is it for?
Well, 12 at least.
Yeah. It's over $500,000. If it is truly critical to you, then maybe we can find a way to make it work. It's possible. If you tell me that, we can look through your numbers and maybe we can find a way to make it work. But I can tell you that it would involve you radically changing the way you live. Have you both entertained the idea of potentially not doing this private school?
The only other option that I would entertain is homeschooling.
That's it?
Yep. I'm not putting my kids in public school. That's a conversation that we really have to get into and make that decision. I mean, and make the decision and make it together. And I mean, and I, but I think we need to kind of live in both scenario, like in the scenario of what that feels like of like cutting back the things. I mean, I think we need to do that anyways, regardless of the school piece. But if we take that out, what does that look like? And if we keep that in, how does that feel? And I think we need to live in that and have that, because we've never really done that. We've never really had the conversations and sat down together and said, okay, are we going out to eat this week? Or we haven't ever really felt that pain.
Yeah.
And I think we need to decide if it, I think we need to feel it to decide if it's worth it.
Let me summarize. Kevin and Sarah make over $300,000 per year. They sold their house. They paid off $130,000 of credit card debt. Yet 6 months later, they were back in $50,000 of credit card debt. They recently committed to 12 years of private school at $55,000 a year, but they have no idea how they're going to pay for it. I truly hope you're getting a chance to watch their facial expressions on the YouTube version of this podcast, because the rest of our conversation is surprising and eye-opening. And you can hear the rest of it next week on the I Will Teach You to Be Rich podcast. I will see you then. Thanks for listening to I Will Teach You to Be Rich. I'm Ramit Sethi. Please follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't read I Will Teach You to Be Rich, my book, pick up a copy. You can get it at any bookstore or any library, and it will show you the specific tactics for how to build the I Will Teach You to Be Rich system into your personal finances.